And away we go. Scott Spears with you here on the Now program, having a great time on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Now remember, you can listen to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM on the website, streaming live, wwgh1071.com. There's also an archive on the website of every show we've ever done dating back to the beginning of 2016. Now, you can also listen on any mobile app absolutely free, no dollars involved, by downloading the free TuneIn app. That's T-U-N-E-I-N app on any mobile device, and searching WWGH Radio. And you can hear us live in Brazil, Japan, China, even in Russia, if you'd like to. Now today we've got a very interesting interview. We're joined by a gentleman who's a performer but also faced some adversity in his life, and we're going to talk about all that beginning to end. Who lives, this gentleman also resides in the Marion area. So we're joined at this time by Tristan Lucas, who goes by the handle Young Tristan. He is a musician, rapper, but as I said, also faced some adversity in his life, being incarcerated at one point. We're going to talk about the whole spiel, and at this point, we'll turn up the microphones and welcome Tristan Lucas, Young Tristan, to these microphones. Tristan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How are you?
Doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good. Glad to be on the air, for real. It's been a long time coming.
Well, good. Is this your first foray into radio?
Yes, it actually is.
Well, you'll do just fine. I'm sure we'll have a great time here. Now, Tristan, where exactly, what area do you live in? Are you in Marion, surrounding area? Where are you?
I'm in the Crawford County area. I actually stay in Bucyrus as of right now.
Bucyrus. Now, tell me about your childhood. Where did you grow up? What kind of things were you interested in?
I grew up in Galleon. I actually had two older sisters growing up, and I kind of looked up to them as I was growing up. So, you know, I didn't have no brothers or nothing. So that's how I kind of got into music, because, you know, I've had tragedies and obstacles I've had to cross in my childhood to get to where I'm at now. And, you know, I'm still dealing with it today, but I don't let that affect the path I'm on. And, you know, I don't want to put my family out there and say that they're bad, because everybody makes mistakes. Everybody makes their own decisions, you know? So I don't fault my family for, you know, all the things that I've been through in my life.
What kind of things were going on with your family when you were a child?
I would say more or less money issues and stability. Just having a bond and a good relationship, you know? So it was kind of rough growing up.
When you grow up with not much money, kind of give us what that looks like. Was there points where you didn't have enough to eat? What kind of house did you live in?
I've actually lived in multiple different locations. I would say, you know, honestly, I have never actually had a place to call home. So I would say growing up is rough like that, because you put it like this: when you get things, you appreciate them a lot more. And, you know, you see other kids who are, you know, better off than what you are. So it makes you wonder, you know, as you're sitting there, like, well, why is my life like this? You know, and it took me a long time to realize, you know, that's what makes you the person. Because if you grow up with nothing, you know, you're more prone to appreciating the things that you work for, you know. And that's like with my career and my music and just daily life. Like, I work towards it, you know. And nothing is, you know what I'm saying, nothing is gained. Everything is earned. So, you know, in anything that's worthwhile, you know, it takes time. It takes persistence and consistency to get to that point, you know. And I would say that, you know, watching what my family did, like my parents-wise, like, because my parents were alcoholics growing up. I mean, they still drink to this day. And my father's actually in jail at the moment. I'll get into that later, but, you know, I've seen a lot of physical abuse, emotional abuse growing up. So, you know, I mean, it's rough. And I'm sure there's a lot of people around the area, you know, who's probably listening that can relate to that.
When you have parents who are alcoholics, how does that affect you directly?
You know, I would say it just depends on what age you are, in all honesty, because, you know, at one point you could be 5 or 6 years old and you really don't know what's going on, you know. And then you could be 10 or 11 and then you kind of understand the situation a little bit better. So when I got to be a teenager, that's when I fully understood, like, you know, I don't fault my parents for drinking, and for the simple fact that maybe there's something deep down inside of them and that's making them, you know what I'm saying, drink heavily and persistent. So, you know, I sit here and every day because I've been through struggles in my life. I mean, you know, I've dealt with addiction, and, you know, I've come to find out that there's something deep down inside of you. Whether or not you know what it is, you know, it's up to you to find out what it is. And, you know, I still don't know what went on with my parents. You know, I don't have a good relationship with my mom. So, but I have a pretty decent relationship with my dad. We was actually incarcerated together 2.5 months ago. And, like, I'll get into that later, you know what I'm saying, ask me about it.
Well, it's very interesting that you would have a better relationship with the parent who's currently incarcerated. What is the problem with the relationship with your mother? How would you classify that? What does that look like today? What is the problem?
I would say we just butt heads a lot. Like, we're so much alike. So when we're talking, I would say we both talk over each other. And I don't think either of our points get through each other. So automatically it's an impulsive thought, like, and it comes off wrong to both of us. So, in all honesty, I mean, it's easiest to just say that we don't have a relationship, but we do. I guess I don't really know how to explain it. But, I mean, I'm working on it every day to try to get a better relationship with her. But she has a problem with the things that I've done. Like, see, with the addictions and the choices I've made, you know. And I don't fault her for that. But things can be taken care of a different way, you know. Sometimes it ain't got to be through words. And, you know, I mean, I guess you could call it tough love.
Well, that's interesting. When you think of the term mom, when people think of the term mom, something comes in their mind. A lot of people think of somebody who protected them, somebody who was there for them, somebody who raised them. When you think of the term mother, what do you think?
Right now or, like, throughout my past?
Give us both, through the past and right now.
You know, I would say, like, in the past, I would say, like, okay, maybe, you know, the definition of a mom, you know, she was there, she was always there, you know, because throughout my life, at one point in time, my dad was leaving, you know what I'm saying, coming and going as he pleased throughout me and my sister's life, and then it kind of flip-flopped when I got older, and as of right now, I would say me and my mom kind of have, like, I would say a sister relationship. Because, you know, there's no type of connection and, like, no advice, you know, no, how do I put that? I don't even know how to put it.
Just what would you like to happen between you and your mother? What would have to change there in that dynamic for that relationship to be better?
I would say, honestly, at some point in time, you know, in the past, I would say month and a half, I thought that there's going to be no way for me and my mother to actually fix our relationship. For the simple fact, like, there's some things that we've said to each other that we can't take back. you know, and at some point we got to get past that. You know, I actually spoke to her on the phone today, and, you know, I mean, she I hope she's listening right now, actually. I actually called a few of my family members, so hopefully they're actually listening right now.
Do you think your mother's listening?
I'm hoping she is. I mean, if not, I'm recording this, so, you know, I can send it to her. But, I mean, a lot of people, when they see you, what they go off of is what other people say about you. And, you know, some people, even your family members and people close to you, they're so quick to assume because of your past actions. And the person I am now is not the person I used to be, because I think a lot differently. You know, I handle situations a lot different. So I'm a very intellectual, consistent, strong-minded person now. But I'm sorry, go ahead, man.
No, it's interesting because I was just thinking, this is a live interview, and we don't know if your mother's listening or not, but at some point she'll hear this. If she's not listening now, you'll send her a copy. And sometimes it's easier to speak about somebody rather than to them, because you said you butt heads. So just speak to your mother right now. What do you want to say to your mother, if she's listening or when she does hear this? You know, just speak to your mother.
Okay, you know, I want to say, like, no matter what, like, you're always going to be my mom. No matter what happens, no matter what decisions, choices I make along my life, you know, despite the past, because, you know, me and her actually endured something. Like, my brother, I had a brother, you know, I have 7 sisters. So we actually endured that together. My baby brother passed away in 2003. And I was actually there. I was only 8 years old. So that's something we went through together. And, you know, it sucks that you're not there for me when I need you, because honestly, I've needed you a lot lately, because I'm still trying to cope and function in life right now, because I spent 23 months incarcerated straight. And, you know, actually I was crying out for you. And, you know, I really need you right now.
Well, hopefully,
and I want you to know. Well, my bad.
Yeah, no. Hopefully she hears this, because it sounds like you two, it would be very proactive to get together.
Yeah. In the right setting, and, you know, if we both have the right mindset. Because, you know, it all depends on the situation and your surroundings on how the person's going to go ahead and make their decision. And, you know, some people act on impulse due to the situation they're in. You know, I find myself doing that sometimes.
Now, you've talked about being incarcerated. How did that happen? What happened?
Okay. So this was back in 2015. I had actually worked at a place in Crestline. It was called Freezer Fresh. Now, at the time, I had worked there for 2 or 3 years. I'm not 100% sure how long I worked there. But, you know, I kind of got moving with the wrong people. And to this day, like, there's only a few people that actually know that I'm innocent to what I did and what I didn't do. Like, I had absolutely nothing to do with what happened to what I pled guilty to. But I took it upon myself, because when I was sitting in jail, I sat in jail for 60 days. I was only 19 years old. And, you know, I was, my attorney kept telling me, like, you know, he was giving me mixed emotions. One time he was telling me, well, you can beat your case. Another time he was telling me you can't, because I had 2 co-defendants. I don't want to put their names out on the air, because, you know, if the viewers want to look into it or whatever, want to look at my past, you can look at it on Google. But back to the situation now. The one friend I had, you know, we was friends for a while. So I had ended up actually getting him a job at the place. And because I was looking for a new job, I was looking for better money. Because at the time, me and my cousin Mike we was actually living, we had our own place. It was my grandpa's house, but he was living in West Virginia. So at that time, I was working at this place, trying to make sure I could pay the bills, and it just got to be too much. So I looked for a new job, so he needed someone to replace me, so I found, you know what I'm saying, I found my new friend at that. Well, I ended up actually leaving this place, and I moved to Galleon. You know, we lost a house, so I actually ended up moving to Galleon. And I would say it was probably 2 or 3 weeks after I left Crestline that I got a new job at Galleon LLC. And one night I was at work, I was supposed to be working a 12-hour shift. Craziest thing ever, like the weirdest coincidence ever. You know, I get sick at work, and they end up sending me home. And so I was living at my sister's house. And so I get to my sister's house, you know, an hour or two goes by, it's probably 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and I get a message from my friend stating that, hey, this place was robbed. And I'm like, okay, why are you messaging me telling me this? Like, so automatically that's a red flag to me, you know, like, you know, because I had moved on, I got a new job, so there's got to be an ulterior motive on why he's messaging me this, telling me. So, and my Aunt Krista, she's the one that told me about it. She was scrolling through Facebook and actually seeing it, because there was a police report that was posted saying that someone had robbed the place that was robbed. And, you know, it was at gunpoint. And at the time, the people didn't know it was a fake gun that was used. That was later described, and, you know, it was in my discovery. So, and after that, everything was cool. You know, I'm like, okay, he's just calling to tell me and let me know. So I have this job, and I go to work the next day. And it's like 2 days later, the kid's messaging me, saying, hey, the manager wants you to come over and do some work. I'm like, okay, you guys know I have a new job. It's obvious I can't come over and work. Well, so that just brings up another red flag in my mind. Like, okay, why are you trying to get me to come back over here? And so I actually start getting paranoid, because I've watched a lot of shows, and you know, at first it was kind of a joke to me, like, okay, these people were trying to frame me. And, you know, to whoever is listening, you know, I'm not putting on a front. Like, this is genuine. This is, like, from deep down in my heart. Like, this is a true story. And so I start feeling like, you know, these people are trying to frame me. And
Why would these people want to frame you?
To take the heat off them. Because I started putting pieces together and actually, you know, looking into what really could have happened, on why my name and why he would be messaging me telling me all this stuff. Because, you know, there's no reason you should be telling me that.
So,
you know.
So what was the charge against you that...
I was indicted on an F1 aggravated robbery in 2015. I believe the indictment came out in July.
An F1 aggravated robbery. So you were there when the robbery happened, or you had the gun in your hand that was a fake gun? What exactly happened?
No, see, that's what I'm getting at. I actually had nothing to do with the crime. I wasn't in contact with anybody that did it, you know.
So you weren't there when the robbery happened?
No. I was at my sister's house because I had worked that day. Like, that's how crazy the coincidence is. Because
so
the kid that I actually got a job for, come to find out, him and the other guy had actually set this whole thing up. And... it's a crazy story. I know it sounds far-fetched, but like I said, there's only a few people, a few close people that I know that actually know, my even my family. Like, they actually know I had nothing to do with the crime, and, you know, I took a charge. You know, I was scared. Like, I was facing 11 years, and my attorney was coming in every 1 or 2 weeks, you know, telling me a different thing every time. So, you know, at that point, I had to choose between go to trial and risk. You know, there's always that risk that I can lose. Even though I didn't do this, I'm already indicted. And the crazy thing is, I'm going to tell you what I got indicted for. I got indicted on a statement from the guy that I got a job for, you know, because he ended up changing his story, because when the police showed up, he was actually working when the robbery happened. He was changing his story up when they did a second interview. Because, you know, when a crime happens, they give you the first initial statement that you got to put down when the crime happens, and then they bring you in for another one. And his story didn't match up.
Well, let me try to, because I think maybe the listeners might be a little confused here. So what place was robbed?
It was Freezer Fresh and Crestline.
Okay, Freezer Fresh and Crestline. People went in with a fake gun and robbed somebody who was there of money. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay. You were not at that building when that robbery took place, correct?
No, I was not.
So how are you implicated in this? Wasn't the person who was robbed, didn't he see who was robbing him?
Okay, see, and that's where things get complicated, because the initial statement from the guy that actually got robbed stated that the guy that came with the robbing was 6'7". Slim, you know, really tall. And me, I'm only maybe 5'7", 5'8". And that goes along with what the guy that I got the job for, he actually changed his statement up, because I had lived in Crestline for a long time, so the police already did not like me. I was unruly juvenile, so the police already did not like me. So when he got interviewed the second time, the cop had actually brought my name up, because I was a past employee, you know, and I had gotten a new job, so my name was automatically brought up.
But and couldn't the person who was robbed have cleared all this up by just looking at you and saying, this is not one of the people who robbed me?
Well, see, it wasn't that simple, because his statement is his statement. Now, the one I got the job for, his statement's another thing, because they got to take all evidence, you know, into consideration. So when the guy I got the job for went in for the interrogation and questioning, he had actually started turning everything over on me, you know, because I had got the guy the job. So who best to turn everything over on, who knew everything so well, who worked there for so long, you know? And at that point, I was actually trying to change my life. And, you know, I got a new job. So, and we wasn't really getting along, because I had got a new job. And we was actually, you know, we had kind of broke apart because of the addiction. So, you know, we really wasn't actually talking or anything anymore. And so he pretty much said the things he said to take the heat off me. And I swear I can actually get the disc from my discovery that has his interview in it, where the cop was, you know, interrogating him, where my name was actually brought up. You know, my name was never brought up until this kid brought my, or until the cop brought my name up. He had never said nothing about me at all until the cop brought my name up. And, you know, that's when things started getting bad. And, you know, I had actually got to call him, the detective, like, hey, come talk to me. So I'm like, you know, I'm scared now. I'm like, I didn't even do nothing.
You know, and Tristan, it's interesting, because all this, I mean, it's over now. You pled, you served your time, you're out. It sounds like you're trying to get things in order in your life. At this point, what would it hurt to say, I did or did not do this? just put it behind you.
Oh yeah, most definitely. I you know, I've constantly been trying to put my past behind me for some time now, even when I was incarcerated, because when I had actually went to plead out to the felony, my attorney told me, because, you know, he had did some more digging, you know, into the case. You know, he had actually went out and spoke with the owner of the place that got robbed. So things started to change up when I went to my change of plea hearing. And we're sitting there right before I go to plead out. And my attorney, he's actually the magistrate of Crawford County. His name's Tim O'Leary. And his exact words were, "I can beat this case. I don't want you to take this plea deal." And at that time, I'm already 60 days in jail, the longest time I've ever spent in jail. You know, I want to go home. I want to be with my family. Christmas is in like a week. So the easiest solution for me is to take this plea deal for probation. And, you know, there's another thing I need to get into, because I'm the only one out of my three co-defendants that pled out to the robbery. And that's public record. I'm the only one out of the three people that had actually had to plead guilty. You know, I don't want to put it on them.
Well, did any of them go to jail, or did any of them end up incarcerated?
The one had actually, the deal was, if he took a probation violation for a prior case, that they would dismiss his F1 felony, which his probation violation only carried 16 months compared to my 36 months. And the other one was on probation in Richland County. And they had actually let him go. So I was the one that got stuck with the restitution. And if anyone was to ever read my discovery, the only thing that held me to that case was the statement from my co-defendant. That was the only thing. The owner never said anything about me. Never did. And, you know, it's a tragic situation, because at this point in time, I wish I could take it back. But I don't now, because it's made me the person I am. And maybe I wouldn't be as mature, you know, and as intellectual as I am now. You know, I learned a lot from being incarcerated, coming across people constantly in the justice system. So you see a lot of characters. You see a lot of different people. I learned to do a lot of things, you know, watch different things, pay attention to people. So... And it made me realize that I can read people. And, you know, because that's all you have time to do is watch people when you're incarcerated. So, you know, you learn to get a feel for people real quick.
I want to talk a little bit about the incarceration, but I have one more question about this, just so we all understand this. So nobody else involved with this crime, just give me a yes or no here, nobody else involved with this crime went to jail or was incarcerated because of this crime. Is that correct?
No, they did not. I was the only one.
Okay. Now, hearing that, this is the last question involving the actual crime, because I want to talk about the incarceration, and I also want to talk about your father, and we only have about 18 minutes left here. There are people out there listening to that story who are going to say, "Forgive me, this is a crackpot, this is a nut job, and he's just trying to put one over on us. This is just a con." What would you say to those people?
Very well. And actually, I had posted a status not too long ago on my fan page. You know, I'm not one to post my personal life on my fan page. But for me to get over the past and the decisions I've made to, you know, put me in the situations I'm, you know, I had actually posted that status because, you know, that's a part of my life that I can't get over. You know, it's something I had to go through. And, you know, I finally accept what I went through. Because the whole time, you know, I was beating myself up over it. You know, I had chances to stay out. And, you know, I had violated my probation. I was actually on probation. And I had violated my probation, so I ended up going back to jail due to addiction. I never reoffended, never caught no any cases. You know, in my past, I've never done anything to get in trouble. Are you there?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Tristan, I do want to talk about incarceration because a lot of people wonder about this. You were incarcerated for 23 months. A lot of people have misconceptions about what prison jail is like. Is it scary? Is it dangerous? Is it a place that helps people reform their life? Give us what those months, those 23 months incarcerated were like.
I actually want to correct you. I did 36 months altogether.
36 months, okay.
36 months, yes. See, it all depends on what type of person you are. Because if you're a weak-minded person, people incarcerated are going to prey on you. Because, you know, they prey on the weak, and I don't know why, but people tend to do that when they're incarcerated because they always want to be the bigger person. And they always want people to look up to them, you know. And jail and prison are two totally different things.
Well,
when you're in jail...
It's an interesting thing because, the popular things now are these lockup shows and the ID channel, and everybody gets this idea that somebody's going to stab you in prison or everybody walks around with a shiv and everybody's dangerous. Is that really what prison and jail is like?
See, there's different levels of prison. And jail is a bit more stressful than prison for the simple fact you don't know when you're going home. You don't know what's going on. You know, you don't have an out date. You're constantly around people that are coming in, you know, that are just starting, you know, to deal with the ongoing situation that they got themselves into. So versus prison, you know when you're going home, you know, and you come across a lot of people. You know, when I was in prison, I came across people that were 18 years old, 17 years old, that are never going home. I came across people that have 3 months that are getting out. So you meet a lot of different people in there. And with the people being scared and worrying about if they're going to get shanked or if you're going to die, that just goes along with the levels of prison because based on your crime and the severity of the crime you commit, there's levels to it. Like there's a level one, an A or a B, a level two, an A or a B, and it goes all the way up to five.
You know, there's a big question, and I think maybe this is it. You know, if you get in trouble for a white-collar crime like, you know, I don't know, check fraud, embezzlement, things people go to prison for, you're not going to be put with the murderers and the violent people and the rapists. You're not going to be with them. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no. Because when they send you to prison, you go to Lorain or you go to Orient, Ohio, which is CRC. Those are where they class you. You get class, that's when you find out what prison you're going to and what level of prison you're going to. So, say the prison system's very packed. Now, if it's very packed, you could get placed in a prison. You could be in there for a possession charge. You could be going to a prison where there's rapists and killers. Because it don't matter what prison you go to, there's always going to be them type of people. But if you're going to a lower prison, 9 times out of 10, if you're around murderers and, you know, people who have done some very bad stuff, they've been there for a long time because they've had to work their way down. So, you know, and they have camps, they have dorms, and then they have cell blocks. So it all depends on what you do in prison because your prison bit is what you make it. If you stay out the way and stay to yourself, you know, there's not much, you know, that people can do to you because the prison system nowadays ain't like it used to be. You know, there's things that protect people, you know, like PREA, you know. So
it's not a place, God forbid, if somebody's headed off to prison right now, that they should be fearful of. There are things in place to keep people safe.
Well, yeah, I would say as human beings, we all fear the unknown. I mean, there's always going to be that fear of the what is. And what could happen, you know, what if I don't make it home? So there's always thoughts in your mind. But if you, you know, if you're, how do I put that? If you're motivated to go home, you're going to do what you have to do to go home. And if you want to get in the way and you want to do, you know what I'm saying, get, there's gangs, if you want to get in the gang, you're going to come across conflict. If you're messing with drugs, you're going to come across conflict. And there's always, you know, there's always temptation. And there's always a consequence for every action in there, even in life. There's always a consequence.
Tristan, we've only got about 10 minutes left here, so I want to kind of go through these next questions because there are about three or four things I still want to cover here. So just kind of give me a short answer on this. You've talked about addiction in this interview. What was your addiction, and how did you get over that? Or do you still fight it today?
You know, when I was younger, I started out smoking weed. So, you know, that kind of, I don't want to say it led to it, but you know, it put other thoughts in my mind, like, well, why do people do these other things? And crazy story is I was over at my buddy's house one time, and he was supposed to get me some weed, and he pulled out this other stuff. And was like, well, here, I have this. And I had actually tried it. It was crack cocaine. And, you know, that was the moment my life had actually went downhill. Because at that point in my life, I made a very bad decision, probably the worst decision I've ever made. And it led me to some dark places. You know, I still have flashbacks because I've done some things I never thought I'd do. You know,
what have you done that you never thought you'd do?
I would say that I've hurt people very badly.
Physically, or mentally?
I would say, yeah, mentally, been very vindictive and manipulative, you know, because when you're in addiction, when you got an addiction, there's not many things that you won't do, you know, especially when you're really addicted to something, because you're going to do what you have to do to get it. And I haven't committed no crimes to get to, you know what I'm saying, obtain the drugs, because I never had to. You know, I always had the means to get the drug. So it never got to a point where I needed to commit a crime. Now, don't get me wrong. If it got to the point where I didn't have no means and that mindset that I was in, yeah, I mean, I would say I probably would have committed a crime. But I never did, you know, and that's what I went to jail. You know, I would say the only thing that really saved me from addiction was jail. And it's not because of the justice system. It's because of me sitting in there wanting to change. And no jail system, no rehab, no book, not a person, no intervention, no aid, you know what I'm saying? No, what's that program called? Narcotics Anonymous. Nothing like that is going to change you. You got to want it deep down inside to change.
Now, very quickly, because we only have 9 minutes left, tell me, why is your father incarcerated, and why do you have a better relationship with him than your mother?
Crazy thing is, he's actually incarcerated on a warrant from a fine from 15 years ago. Crazy thing. And it finally caught up to him. So now me and my dad have a better relationship. I mean, we're men. So we're going to have a better relationship. And, you know, my dad's been, I would say, more involved in my life. I would say emotionally wise, because, you know, I got six sisters, and I have four younger sisters. So I've been there for my little sisters, and my father's been there for my little sisters. You know, I'm not saying my mother hasn't, but my father's been more, when he's been out, he's been more interactive in their life, you know, and he's helped me, you know, mentally and physically to get my life right and to try to stay on the right path. And when I got out of jail, he's helped me get a job. You know, he's given me the tools and the foundation for me to get my life right. So, you know, that's what makes me have a better bond with him. And I was actually incarcerated when I just finished my time November 23rd. So I haven't even been out 2 months yet. And we was actually incarcerated together. You know, we was bunkies. It was actually a pretty crazy experience, I would say, because I had to leave him in jail, and a part of me wishes that you know, because of my sisters, that I could have done the rest of his time for him so he could be there for my baby sisters, you know. And because I love my baby sisters, and I don't have no kids or nothing. So my baby sisters, you know, in a sense, are my kids, because I would do anything for them, you know.
Let's get to this, Tristan, because we're getting close to the end here, and we do want to talk about your career. Now, you rep. Now, can you give us... Now, remember, we're on radio, so we've got to be clean and clear here, but can you give us a little bit of what you do repping?
Yes. Do you want me to... I'll put a instrumental on, and I won't do no cuss words or nothing. I'm actually there. You know, I have a lot of content where I, you know, there is profanity, but there's some content that I do where there is none. So, and this is actually a free verse. So, let me put this instrumental on real quick.
Okay, again, we're chatting with a young Tristan here. If you want to look him up, he is on Facebook, and he's going to give us an instrumental rap here. One of the cleaner raps. There are some more, maybe non-G-rated raps that you can hear if you go to his page. But, you know, that's for non-radio, and you can listen to it there.
Okay. The beat's actually about to come on, and I do not own rights to this instrumental. I just went on YouTube to look up this instrumental. This is Mockingbird instrumental by Eminem, and this is a little verse I wrote, and I'm going to give him a little something. So, here it goes. I just hope it's not too loud.
Okay.
Hoping you can hear it pretty decent. Can you hear the instrumental pretty decent?
Yeah, it sounds okay. You sound good.
Okay. All right. All I want is happiness, is that too much of grass, hoping all these dark times in my mind will come to pass. This depression has killing me. You're somehow killing me. Why my friends, they killing me. Through the cops, they drilling me. Just pain, man, it's so much to bear. Living life in despair like I'm walking up on thin there. I just can't, man. Won't care, man. Why is the life so unfair, man? I just can't and won't care. Why is life so unfair? Headed for that spark there. Took me medium rare. Oh, that's how you're right there. I am your worst nightmare. Watch out, man. Beware. I'll mess your mind up right there. Are you a foe or a friend? Will I live? Will it end? Will I sit and pretend? In the end, my pain will make, because I am dead to all my friends. You met my bitter rent, and I can't pretend. All these people. One second, hold on. Alright. I'm so disgusted by my ex and many thoughts of my past. I used to love doing drugs. I used to love being bad, but then I sat in the jail day and night feeling hurt. I ask God every day, God, why am I cursed? I feel it's all getting worse. I need to find a way to break the chains of doom this time, because this depression has been killing me. 24 years old, so tell me what is my worth. I'm so sick, and I've been asking God for help. The judge don't want to listen, so I feel I'm in hell. I feel I'm up in hell. So God, please give me advice so I can sleep through the night. Because this is so cold, so it's colder than ice. It's on my head like some light. It makes me not feel all right. So this is my farewell for them drugs in my life. There you go.
No, that was good. We appreciate that. That was very interesting. Now, if you could write the rest of your life from this point on, you have the rapping going on, you've lived your life, you've went through what you've went through, the past is the past, but the future is still yours to choose. How do you choose to write the future?
Be a success story, because, you know, there's a lot of trials and tribulations people go through, and people ask me all the time, and it's a lot of my family too, on why I'm doing what I'm doing. Why am I consistently and constantly putting my effort into, you know, being on Facebook, being on this, all these social media networks. And I came a long way on my fan page. I've actually got 26,000 followers. And, you know, that's not that much, but for me, coming from a small town with 26,000 people, you know, that's pretty decent. And, you know, I just want to be something my little sisters can look at and be like, that's my brother.
Tristan, we've only got 60 seconds here, so answer this in 60 seconds. What's your biggest fear?
My biggest fear, being a failure and not doing something for my family, you know, that I could help alter their lives. Because in all reality, life's about family. And if you ain't got family, what do you got?
Do you fear ending back up in prison or jail?
No. Failure is not an option, neither is incarceration. And the last place I want to be is incarcerated. So I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure I stay free so I can be there for my family and my loved ones.
Tristan, if people want to check out your music or talk to you, what's the best place to do that?
I have a personal page. The page name is T-Loop. And my fan page, you actually just type in Young Tristan. It'll pop up a public figure from Galleon, Ohio. That's all you got to do. And you can message me. My phone number's on the page, my contact information for my email. So if anyone ever wants to check it out, I can also give my phone number on live air.
Go ahead, quickly.
You guys
drop
are
it
okay
in.
With that.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, it's 419-967-3478.
All right, we've been.
I accept calls and texts if anyone ever wants to talk. You know, talk about things I've said on the air. You know, need some advice, anything like that. I'm here, and I'm hoping they bring me on air again so you guys can hear. So I really appreciate everybody's time. You know, and I hope everyone has a blessed night.
We've been chatting with Young Tristan Lucas. And Tristan, we appreciate your honesty, and we appreciate your coming on today, and hopefully the future looks bright. Thank you for your time.
Yep, thank you.
This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Do it. Of course, it doesn't. I think in the end it doesn't matter, but it's just whatever you think. So I thought Marla, I wanted to end Marla. Yeah, had a better rhythm to me.